Now, we're about to interview John Wilhelm, somebody I know actually pretty well from a long history. Just keep repeating it. They ask you, where were you on the night that Kennedy was killed? I was at Cornell University. Where were you on the night that Martin Luther King was killed? I was sleeping on John Wilhelm's floor in New Haven, Connecticut, where John was a very effective community organizer. He's went from there to being a member of HERE, Hotel and Restaurant Worker, became one of their lead organizers, became their president, and contributed to the merger. He's a very good organizer. He believes in organizing. I think he believes in rank and file involvement. The question is, are the strategic questions facing the movement right now, which are very profound, what does John think we should do? So, John Wilhelm, welcome to Voices from the Frontlines. It's nice to be talking to you.
Thanks very much. It's really an honor to be on the show.
Well, John, I think you know you're at a very historic juncture. I mean, I'm sure you stay up all night weighing your options very carefully. Why don't you start with what is the critique? Leaving aside yet the tactical plan, what would you say are the fundamental differences of the Change to Win and the Sweeney administration? How serious are the differences right now?
The differences are extremely serious. The workers in this country are in trouble. The percentage of the workforce that is in unions has declined to about 12.5%, less than 8% in the private sector. And as a direct result of that, income inequality in this country is increasing. The middle class is shrinking. Healthcare coverage provided by employers is disappearing, which is why we have close to 50 million people uninsured in this country today. Pensions are now disappearing. Who would have ever thought that pensions could be taken away from workers in the airline industry?
That's right.
One of the most organized industries in the country with virtually not a peep. And the AFL-CIO, like every union, has to re-examine what it's doing. The AFL-CIO's present structure and mission is essentially unchanged in the last 50 years since the CIO and the AFL merged in 1955. And like every union, the AFL-CIO has got to re-examine what it does. And in my view, we have to focus the primary amount of resources that exist in the labor movement on the task of helping workers who want to have a union organize a union. There are millions of workers in this country who want to have a union. And we have to focus our resources on that. And if we don't do that, then we're going to become economically as well as politically irrelevant as a labor movement. I believe in the span of history that workers have always invented something else when the existing worker institutions didn't work. And so I'm sure that workers in the 21st century in this country will invent something else if the AFL-CIO and the current structure of the labor movement can't be relevant. But there's no reason that the current structure of the labor movement can't become relevant. We just have to reexamine it like every 21st century institution.
Well, John, when John Sweeney came to power, I think there was a tremendous amount of hope that you were obviously involved in the alliance to elect John Sweeney, right?
Correct.
So was Andy Stern. So were, I'm sure, all the forces that you allied with in the Change to Win. There was tremendous hope. Sweeney talked about putting more money into organizing, making organizing the central issue for the labor movement. I don't think he hinted very much at independence from the Democratic Party, but there was even a hint of pushing the Democratic Party to do something. What happened, and how would you say both Andy Stern, who was one of his proteges, actually, and yourself, moved from supporting John Sweeney to considering a need for change at the top?
John Sweeney's a good man, and I think he's done his best, but the style of leadership in the AFL-CIO today is a consensus style of leadership, and I don't think that'll work in the crisis that we're in. I think the AFL-CIO has got to model in its own behavior, in its own resource allocation, a primary focus on organizing the unorganized, and I think it's got to encourage and incentivize the unions that make up the Federation to do the same. And there's a lot of ways that could be done. I think John Sweeney ran into a level of complacency at the top level of the American labor movement that he probably hadn't anticipated, and I think he has basically given up on the thrust to focus more on organizing. On the political side, I think John found a good deal more responsiveness from the top levels of the American labor movement in terms of putting more energy and more resources into politics. And I think that's a good thing, but I also believe that during the past 10 years, the AFL-CIO's political operation, while it's exhibited a good deal more energy, has unfortunately become a wing of the National Democratic Party. I don't think our members want that. I think the majority of the time our members would like the labor movement to support Democrats, but I don't think our members want the labor movement's political arm to be captured by any political party. And I think we need to challenge the Democratic Party when it does wrong. After all, it was the Clinton administration that brought us NAFTA, not a Republican administration. And so I think we need to challenge the Democratic Party when it's not supporting working people. If necessary, I think we ought to primary some Democrats. We ought to look for Republicans, and there are some who merit the labor movement's active support. So I think the political operation needs to be made a truly independent voice for workers. But I think that the largest challenge, and the one that is the most missing from the past 10 years of the Sweeney administration, is to focus the resources of the AFL-CIO on organizing unorganized workers. We can't be politically successful at 12.5% of the workforce and shrinking. So we've got to grow the labor movement again, and the seeds of it are there. The reason I'm a tremendous optimist about the future of the labor movement is that the primary need in this country today coincides with the primary mission of the labor movement. And that is to deal with globalization by doing everything we can to protect union manufacturing jobs, but to focus, as people did in the 30s, on making those jobs that, by definition, are going to stay in this country, healthcare jobs, janitorial jobs, security jobs, hospitality industry jobs, all of those jobs that, by definition, aren't going to leave this country, can by unionization be made into good middle-class jobs with wages to support families and with health care, with pension. And that's what the country needs in order to revive the middle-class dream in America. So I'm a great optimist, but we've got to refocus our resources. We've got to do what every 21st century institution has to do, which is to reevaluate how to function and what the priorities are in the face of globalization.
We have John Wilhelm, president of the hospitality industry of Unite HRE, on the phone. You're listening to Voices from the Frontlines on KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara, and this is part of Pacifica's national coverage of the 2005 AFL-CIO convention in Chicago. John, one of the things that Change to Win is calling for is the consolidation of many different unions, you know, much smaller unions into one large union. And obviously there's advantages to that, given that if you're a bigger union, you can at least bargain much harder. But the disadvantage is what happens to, you know, sort of grassroots, worker-led unions that have been fighting really good fights in their local union. I think one of the critiques that I've been reading a lot about is what's the advantage for those groups to join into a much broader, bigger union? How would the question of democracy be able to be addressed in that?
Well, that's the challenge that every human institution faces in the 21st century in the face of globalization. I think there's no question that unions have to respond to the consolidation of ever larger global corporations by becoming bigger so that there's more resources. I think it's even more important in a larger union to make sure that rank and file workers have the leading voice in the union. And Unite here, we're very proud of the fact that we're a rank-and-file driven union. I spent 12 years full-time in Las Vegas. And our union in Las Vegas, which has grown from 18,000 members in 1987 to 60,000 members today, is a tremendous example of a rank-and-file unionism in action. A local 11 of the hotel workers in Los Angeles, local 2 of the hotel workers in San Francisco. Those are tremendous examples of militant rank and file unions. So we have to find a way to combine larger organizations that have the resources to realistically challenge global corporations with genuine democracy in the union, and I think that's doable. I think that's what people want today. I think people want to have an active voice in the affairs of the organizations that affect them, such as unions, but at the same time, people also know that those organizations have to have sufficient resources.
Well, John, let me say back to Eric, that was Manuel Criollo on the last question. I'm going to try to go through some of the criticisms that have been raised by people that would be normally friends of the Change to Win and open, certainly. They share much of your critique of the existing structure, but they're raising concerns. So let's go through them and see how you can hit the ball. One of the criticisms is that the internal fights among unions, whether or not they're large or small, let's take United Food and Commercial Workers. It was heavily criticized for a very poorly organized strike in Southern California, where they had tremendous rank-and-file involvement. The workers, when they first went out, had tremendous will to fight. But basically, there was no game plan. We had them on the show several times. The whole concept was simply to wait out the companies. They had virtually no, let's be honest, a very weak community-based pressure on them. Meanwhile, the employers loaned each other's money, it turned out, to create essentially a consortium. United Food and Commercial Workers is not a small union, and yet it was handily defeated in the strike with the, you know, with simply the West Coast employers in the food industry. What would be different? What would be different, and what have you learned, and what have people learned from that about consolidating to larger groups, or even the organizing strength of your own coalition if UFCW is being so heavily criticized right now?
The United Food and Commercial Workers has a new international president, Joe Hansen, who took office after the Southern California strike lockout. And I think the UFCW, as well as the labor movement as a whole, learned a great deal from the Southern California strike lockout. The basic problem, as I see it, as an outsider to that union, but certainly as an interested observer, was that the union structured itself to conduct that fight locally and regionally while it was dealing with national and global supermarket companies. And we tried to learn from that in Unite Here's dealings with the hotel industry. We have worked very hard in the last 4 years to line up the contract expiration dates in as many hotel cities as possible so that they all expire in 2006. That was a central issue in the recent contract victory with the Los Angeles hotels by United Here Local 11, which prevailed in getting a 2006 contract expiration date so that now hotel contracts in Toronto, Chicago, New York, Boston, Los Angeles, Honolulu, Monterey, and a number of smaller cities are all expiring in 2006, and the Local 2 in San Francisco has the same objective. And the goal of all of that was to enable workers around the country to pursue the local demands that are important to them in the hotel industry, but at the same time to aggregate their strength in dealing with global companies. That's really the lesson, I think, of the Southern California strike lockout, and it's a lesson that I think the UFCW has absorbed, although at a tremendous pain and cost. And you're absolutely right. The members of the UFCW in Southern California were extraordinary during that whole struggle, and so was the public to a large
That's
degree
right.
in terms of supporting them. And the union, I believe, has learned a great deal from that. It's a painful way to learn.
Well, that's fun, and I think you're right. And by the way, congratulations to both Marilena Durazo and to Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa for helping to negotiate the expiration of the contract
Absolutely.
Issue. Which is a tremendous victory for Unite Here, and obviously we're not neutral in that fight. We're very happy that it developed. Let's move on to a second concern people have raised, that the issues that, I mean, you're going to go into a convention, and you know John Sweeney is a pretty smart guy, and the issues so far from a lot of people watching from afar seem either bureaucratic or incremental. That is to say, you're going to say you want $25 million taken off the credit cards to credit card revenues to put into an organizing pot. What if Sweeney says, all right, $12 million, $13 million, $13.5 million? for the average person watching from the outside, they're going to say, all right, what is the big fight here? I mean, Sweeney's certainly not going to go into the convention saying, well, you're changed to win, I'm changed to lose. I mean, he's going to, so explain to us how you think the debates, you know, if you can do like a mock debate here, John, give us Sweeney's best shot and then give us your best rebuttal. And we're not trying to personalize it. We're not trying to put you in a position to personalize the struggle with John. But John is a very important figure. And if you're leading an insurgent caucus, you have to be able to explain to our listeners how profound are those differences.
The differences are extremely profound. On the issue of allocating resources to organizing, at Unite Here's merger convention last year, we resolved as an international union to establish a goal that before our next convention in 2009, we would spend 50% of the international union's total income on organizing unorganized workers. And we believe that a goal on that order of magnitude is appropriate for the AFL-CIO as well. So the Change to Win Coalition has proposed that there be two large organizing appropriations. One would be a rebate of up to 50% of the total per capita dues paid by each international union to the AFL-CIO each year to support well thought out, systematic, well-resourced, strategic organizing campaigns that unions develop in their core industries, in the industries that they understand. And that would amount to about $47 million a year out of an AFL-CIO budget of $125 million. In addition to that, as you pointed out, we have proposed that an additional $25 million out of the total AFL-CIO budget should be devoted to large-scale campaigns that no one union can undertake on its own, such as Walmart, for example, or Federal Express, huge companies that have an enormous influence on the condition of workers in this country today. That's a total of $72 million out of a total AFL-CIO budget of $125 million that the Change the Wind Coalition believes should be focused directly on organizing. The comparative figure from the Sweeney administration is $22.5 million. So that's an enormous amount of money, but it's also a very stark indication of the difference in how the Change to Win Coalition assesses the priorities. In addition to that, and flowing from that, the AFL-CIO, unfortunately, has become a very large bureaucracy on 16th Street in Washington. We believe that it needs to be considerably leaner and put more money into organizing workers directly, and then it needs to be considerably decentralized. After all, the action in terms of organizing workers and winning good contract standards and electing people to office is not in Washington, D.C. It's in Los Angeles and San Francisco and Fresno and Monterey and other places like that all across the country. So those are two of the major differences. Now, having said all that, it is perfectly clear with the convention of the AFL-CIO opening 1 week from today, that the that unions representing a majority of AFL-CIO union members support the status quo, support the Sweeney administration, and support the status quo program the Sweeney administration has put forward. So we, in the Change to Win Coalition, we recognize that unions representing a majority of the AFL-CIO believe that a continuation of business as usual is reasonable and appropriate. We respectfully disagree with that. I would also point out, when you listed the unions that make up the Change to Win Coalition at the beginning of your program, that the Carpenters Union was disaffiliated from the AFL-CIO a couple of years ago, has also joined the Change to Win Coalition.
Okay. Well, obviously the question of for instance, if there was a big national campaign against Walmart with a $50 million or $25 million budget to start, I think that could attract the imagination of a lot of people in this country. I think people are looking for targets. There's a great article I'm sure you saw in the New York Times business section this week about the difference between Costco, the anti-Walmart, showing that there's a company that can pay $17 an hour, signed a very good contract with the Teamsters, and its share price is doing better than Walmart's, and its profit margins are doing fine too, you know. So there is the possibility, even under competitive capitalism, for a decent employer with a decent attitude towards its workers. In fact, it would help Costco a lot if the labor movement kicked Walmart's butt, right? I mean, it would obviously support the more progressive employers and punish the more reactionary ones. The question now is, since, you know, if that campaign ever got off the ground, the Labor Community Strategy Center Bus Riders Union would jump all over it as allies. What's going to happen if, as you say, at one point, John, there was a rumor, you know, that you were thinking of running for president. So I have two questions. It seems like, one, you're not going to run a candidate. That doesn't – I'm asking, is that correct, that given your counting of the cards? And secondly, if, in fact, the majority are supporting the existing policy and many of the things that you want don't happen, at least what are the options you face, including the possibility of forming a second federation?
We have already announced in the Change the Wind Coalition that because unions representing a majority of AFL-CIO union members believe the status quo is acceptable, that we have formed an alternative organization. We've structured it so that unions can belong to it whether they are in the AFL-CIO or out of the AFL-CIO. The Carpenters Union is joined, even though they're not in the AFL-CIO. The Service Employees International Union, SEIU, has made it perfectly plain that they intend to disaffiliate from the AFL-CIO following the convention if, as appears probable, there is no fundamental reform and there is no leadership change. So there will be an alternative organization, and we don't say that with any recrimination or any bitterness. If unions representing a majority of the AFL-CIO members think that our proposals to do things in a different way are not sensible, then we don't believe we should prolong the battle about that past the convention. We believe that we should pursue what we think would be sensible goals and see whether we can make any headway. We believe that we can make headway. We believe organizing can be done on a much bigger scale. SEIU, after all, is the fastest growing union in the country and the biggest union in the country. And others of us have made significant progress in organizing. So there will be an alternative organization. The question of whether unions other than the Carpenters and the SEIU will leave the AFL-CIO is unknown. Our own union is certainly discussing that matter, and I think Unite Here, as well as the other unions in the Change to Win Coalition, are simply keeping our options open with respect to whether or not to stay in the AFL-CIO. But we're all determined to pursue the Change to Win Coalition to see whether we can make progress with some of the things that we think make sense, given that unions representing a majority of the AFL-CIO union members do not think that the proposals we've put forward make sense. And I think that's as it should be. If we can't persuade the AFL-CIO to reform in the way that we think is appropriate, then we should try to do things ourselves and see if we can demonstrate whether or not they make sense.
No, absolutely. So I think that the question is, you're going to have to figure out, Gerald McEntee, your friend, is coming on the phones in a minute or two, and we're going to ask his side of the story. So let me end, John, with your last point, that you don't know yet if Unite Here, you know Unite Here is part of Change to Win. You don't know if you're going to disaffiliate after the convention. Is there the possibility that the AFL-CIO might ask certain unions to leave if they're part of the Change to Win coalition?
I certainly hope not. I mean, I'm delighted you have Jerry McEntee coming on. Jerry is a terrific leader. I happen to have a different opinion on some of this stuff, but Jerry bears a tremendous amount of the credit for the re-energizing of the AFL-CIO's political program over the last 10 years. I think it's great that he's coming on. I hope the AFL-CIO doesn't pursue a scorched earth policy, although there's a lot of indications that it will. Just by way of example, the Sweeney administration has indicated that its position will be that when the SEIU disaffiliates, which seems a certainty, that Central Labor Councils and state federations, the L.A. County Federation of Labor, the San Francisco Central Labor Council, the California State Federation of Labor, and bodies like that will not be able to work in a dues-paying coalition of any kind with SEIU. That's crippling, and it's unnecessary. In Los Angeles, for example, the SEIU is about one-third of the dues income of the L.A. County Federation of Labor, and it's even bigger than that in terms of the energy and activism and participation that it has brought to the extraordinarily successful political program of the L.A. County Federation of Labor. And so if that's the kind of scorched earth policy that the Sweeney administration pursues, then I think rather than being able to simply have some unions work on one reform program and have the AFL-CIO pursue its own program, won't be possible. And I think that would be tragic. I think it's one thing to have a difference of opinion about where we ought to go, particularly on the organizing question. It's something else entirely to pursue a scorched earth policy that would result in dividing unions unnecessarily one from another. You know, in the case of Unite Here, there are lots of reasons why we might decide to stay in the AFL-CIO. There's a lot of compelling arguments for that. But if the Sweeney administration forces unions to choose between pursuing a kind of more aggressive organizing program and a more aggressive reform program that we think makes sense, if we're forced to choose between that and staying in the AFL-CIO, that's a tough choice. And I hope that's not where this goes.
Well, John, thanks so much for being on the show. And this is going nationally. Today it's on throughout L.A. It's on streaming on the web on kpfk.org. It's going to be run through both the KPFK, the Pacifica stations, and about 60 affiliates over the next week. And we'd like to have you back soon, as well as having Gerald back to continue this discussion, because obviously the labor movement is central to the folks who are listening to Voices from the Frontline. So,
well, I'd be honored to come back. I think you ought to have President McEntee and me on at the same time. He's a terrific leader, and I enjoy debating with him.
Okay, well, we'll try to work it out with both of you. Thanks, John.
Thanks so much.
Take good care. And Gerald, are you on with us?
I've been on.
That's good. That's what we wanted you to do, right, is catch the tail end. Well, we're with Gerald McEntee, who's the president, the international president of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. We're going to take a short break and tell our listeners you're on KPFK 90.7 FM, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara. This is part of KPFK's national coverage of the AFL-CIO convention. Hang with us, Gerald, and we'll be back with you in 1 minute.
M to the A to the S to the K for the